There are two types of war correspondents. The first type does not attend press conferences. They do not beg generals and politicians for interviews. They take risks from combat zones. They send back to their viewers or readers what they see, which is almost always diametrically opposed to official narratives. This first type, in every war, is a tiny minority. Then there is the second type, the inchoate blob of self-identified war correspondents who play at war. Despite what they tell editors and the public, they have no intention of putting themselves in danger. They are pleased with the Israeli ban on foreign reporters into Gaza. They plead with officials for background briefings and press conferences. They collaborate with their government minders who impose restrictions and rules that keep them out of combat. They slavishly disseminate whatever they are fed by officials, much of which is a lie, and pretend it is news. They join little jaunts arranged by the military dog and pony shows, where they get to dress up and play soldier and visit outposts where everything is controlled and choreographed. The mortal enemy of these poseurs are the real war reporters, in this case, Palestinian journalists in Gaza. These reporters expose them as toadies and sycophants, discrediting nearly everything they disseminate. For this reason, the poseurs never pass up a chance to question the veracity and motives of those in the field. I watch these snakes do this repeatedly to my colleagues, Robert Fisk and John Pilger, and this is, of course, what I experienced a few moments ago. When war reporter Ben Anderson arrived at the hotel where journalists covering the war in Liberia were encamped, in his words, getting drunk at bars on expenses, having affairs and exchanging information rather than actually going out and getting information, his image of war reporters took a huge hit. I thought, finally, I'm amongst my heroes, Anderson told me. This is where I've wanted to be for years. And then me and the cameraman I was with, who knew the rebels very well, he took us out for about 3 weeks with the rebels. We came back to Monrovia. The guys in the hotel bar said, "Where have you been? We thought you'd gone home." We said, "We went out to cover the war. Isn't that our job? Isn't that what you're supposed to do?" The romantic view I had of foreign correspondents was suddenly destroyed. In Liberia, he went on, I thought, actually, a lot of these guys are full of shit. They're not even willing to leave the hotel, let alone leave the safety of the capital and actually do some reporting. The dividing line, which occurred in every war I covered, defines the reporting on the genocide in Gaza. It is not a divide of professionalism or culture. Palestinian reporters expose Israeli atrocities and implode Israeli lies. The rest of the press does not. Palestinian journalists targeted and assassinated by Israel pay as many great war correspondents do with their lives, although in far greater numbers. Israel has murdered 245 journalists in Gaza by one count, and more than 273 by another. The goal is to shroud the genocide in darkness. No war I covered comes close to these numbers of dead. Since October 7th, Israel has killed more journalists than the US Civil War, World Wars I and II, the Korean War, the Vietnam War, including the conflicts in Cambodia and Laos, the wars in Yugoslavia in the 1990s, and the post 9/11 war in Afghanistan combined, according to an April 2025 study by Brown University. Journalists in Palestine leave wills and record videos to be read or played at their death. On a sweltering afternoon a few weeks ago, I was in the office of the head of Palestinian TV in Cairo, talking with Salman al-Bashir, who was the network's correspondent in Gaza. On the evening of November 2nd, 2023, Salman was scheduled for the evening broadcast. It was, he tells me ruefully, the 106th anniversary of the Balfour Declaration, which in 1917 committed the British government to establishing, quote, a national home for the Jewish people in Palestine. Palestine TV reporter Mohammed Abu Khattab was concluding his six-hour shift at 7 p.m. on the grounds of Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis. After reporting on the ongoing bombings and destruction, he handed broadcasting over to Salman. Abu Khattab, whose apartment was next to the hospital, went home. Most of the other journalists, because traveling any distance in Gaza was dangerous, slept in tents on the hospital grounds. There was an explosion near the hospital, Salman says on a video he shows me of his broadcast. We can hear an explosion that is very loud. Television presenter Duha Shami in Ramallah says to Salman, it sounds close. Yes, Salman says on air. There has been an explosion. I see the ambulances. I will let you know when we have any news. A member of the emergency team at the hospital runs towards Salman shouting, Mohammed Abu Khattab, Mohammed Abu Khattab, your friend, your colleague, has been martyred. They targeted the house of Abu Khattab. Salman stops, he looks into the camera and says, the target was apparently the house of Mohammed Abu Khattab's family. A lot of people have been killed. Mohammed Abu Khattab was apparently martyred. Salman stands in front of the camera wearing a blue flak jacket with the word press emblazoned on it. He is wearing a blue helmet and holds a microphone. There is no international protection at all and no immunity, he says to the camera tearfully, as the red lights of an ambulance flash behind him. These flak jackets and helmets do not protect us. They are just slogans that we wear. They do not protect journalists at all. Here we are victims losing our lives one after the other at no cost, he says, as he removes the chin strap of his helmet and takes the helmet off. We are waiting for our turn, one after another. He undoes his flak jacket, lets it drop to the ground. We can't take it anymore, he says emotionally on the camera. We're exhausted. Here we become martyrs. It is only a matter of time. No one sees us or the size of the catastrophe. No one sees the crime we are experiencing in Gaza. Psychologically, I couldn't accept it, Salman told me in Cairo. I was with him 20 minutes earlier, now he was dead. They brought his body to the hospital. I refused to look at him. The people who saw him told me half of his face had blown away. In the video, he turns away from the camera and sobs. Duha in Ramallah folds her head into her hands and wipes away tears. We are victims on live television, he says in the broadcast. Mohammed Abu Khattab was here half an hour ago. He left us, along with his wife, his son, his brother, and other members of his family. Salman shows me a video of Mohammed's funeral. He is one of the pallbearers. Mohammed's body is wrapped in a white shroud. His blue flak jacket and a microphone lie on top of his body, along with a small Palestinian flag. There is no God but God, the crowd chants. The martyrs are God's beloved. Salman then shows us a video of the gutted remains of Mohammed's apartment where he and 10 family members were killed. Did you do anything differently after Mohammed was killed, I asked. I was very cautious, Salman answered. How, I asked. With my language, he said. I started speaking very professionally. I talked about the war and the details of a war without using words other journalists were using. I tried not to aggravate the Israelis. I no longer referred to them as Zionists or the new Nazis. I stopped using words like messianic. I stopped calling them the Israeli Occupation Army. I called them the Israeli Army. Salman continued his work until his friend, the Al Jazeera cameraman, Samer Abu Dhaka, who had Belgian citizenship, was killed on December 15, 2023, in a drone strike. Samir had sent his family, including four children, to Belgium, but he refused to leave Gaza. He and Wa'il al-Duda, Al Jazeera's Gaza bureau chief, had been covering the aftermath of an Israeli strike that killed at least 20 people at Haifa School in Han Yunis, which was being used as a shelter for displaced families. Wa'il was wounded in his hand and stomach, but managed to escape. The Israeli soldiers and hovering drones fired on ambulances and medics attempting to reach Samir. Three rescue workers were killed. Samir, who was 45, bled to death over 5 hours. "I was with Samir on the day before he was martyred," Salman said softly. "That was it. I couldn't continue. I had to leave Gaza." In August 2025, when Middle East journalist Mohammed Salama and Ahmed Abu Aziz, Reuters photojournalist Hussam al-Masri, and freelancers Mawaz Abu Taha and Mariam Daga, who had worked with several media outlets, including the Associated Press, were killed, along with 15 others at Nasser Hospital in a double-tap strike designed to kill first responders following the initial strike. How did Western news agencies respond? Israeli military says strikes on Gaza hospital targeted what it says was a Hamas camera, the Associated Press reported. IDF claims hospital strike was aimed at Hamas camera, announced CNN. Israeli army says six terrorists killed in Monday strike on Gaza hospital, the AFP headline read. Initial inquiry says Hamas camera was target of Israeli strike that killed journalists, Reuters reported. Israel claims troops saw Hamas camera before deadly hospital attack, Sky News explained. For the record, the camera belonged to Reuters. The news agency said Israel was fully aware they were filming from the hospital. Al Jazeera correspondent Anas al-Sharif, one of the most popular journalists in Gaza, who reported daily on the genocide, received death threats on his phone. In November 2023, the Israeli military ordered Anas to cease reporting and leave northern Gaza. They sent him messages informing him that he was being tracked. His family home was bombed, killing his father. The Israeli military's Arabic spokesman accused him of terrorism and being a Hamas operative overseeing the launching of rockets into Israel. The Committee to Protect Journalists called the sustained attacks on Anas a precursor to assassination. The Tel Aviv-based magazine Plus 972 reported that the Israeli military has a special unit called the Legitimization Cell, which carries out campaigns to portray Palestinian journalists as Hamas operatives in an effort to justify their assassination. In October 2024, Anas was with a group of journalists who were fired upon by Israeli soldiers in Jabalia. Cameraman Fadi El-Wahidi, clearly marked as a journalist in his flak jacket, was shot in the neck and paralyzed. Soon after, the Israeli military accused six journalists, including Anas, of being militants. His Instagram account was taken down. On May 2, 2025, after Israel blocked food and humanitarian aid, Anas reported on the mounting malnutrition and starvation in Gaza. In July, he posted on social media that he is drowning in hunger and called the starvation a slow death. In one broadcast, he choked back tears as a malnourished woman behind him fainted. A bystander shouted, "Keep going, Anas. You are our voice." On August 10, 2025, Anas and three other journalists were killed by an Israeli drone while in their media tent outside of Shifa Hospital. How was the killing of these journalists reported by their colleagues in the Western press? "Israel kills Al Jazeera journalist it says was Hamas leader," reported Reuters titled its story, despite the fact that Anas was part of a Reuters team that had won a 2024 Pulitzer Prize. German newspaper Bild published a front page story headlined, "Terrorist disguised as a journalist killed in Gaza."